You have before you this morning the Board of Investigators for a public hearing on their budget bill. I delivered to your offices yesterday a memo that briefly summarizes the major issues with the board. This is a relatively new agency. It was created by the 1997 Legislative Assembly. The board's responsible for licensing private investigators and operatives. The agency is funded 100% through other funds, which come from fees for applications and licenses of these folks. The governor's recommended budget is 21.4% above the 9901 estimated expenditures. Again, I would caution, though, that as this is a relatively new agency, it's taking some time to get into the flow of things and find out exactly how many folks out there that need to be licensed. There are four policy packages, including the governor's recommended budget. We'll get into those in a little more detail later on this morning. There are two other pieces of legislation that have currently been introduced that affect this agency. Senate Bill 406, as originally introduced, would have allowed the board to assess the costs of disciplinary hearings to the licensee if the licensee was found to be in violation. The bill, however, was amended in the Senate Judiciary Committee and now would exempt a large portion of those who are currently licensed from the license requirement.
Has that bill moved from committee, Mr. Chair, any place? Is it still in committee, the Judiciary Committee?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troy, it has passed out of the Judiciary Committee and has been referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, so it's something that's now in our possession.
That's correct. Okay. Senate Bill 723, another bill that's been introduced, would reduce the fees charged by the Board of Investigators. This bill, if adopted, would require us to reduce expenditures for the board due to lack of sufficient revenue. That bill has also had its first reading and been referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee and is in that committee currently. And with that, we have with us today Jack Yarborough, a member of the Board of Investigators, and Michael Jacobs, the Executive Director, and Sarah Gates from the Department of Administrative Services.
Would you
come? Good morning, Representative Hansen and members of the committee. My name is Jack Yarborough, and I'm an Oregon Board of Investigator board member appointed January 2000. And I wanted to speak a little bit today about our position. The mission of the Oregon Board of Investigators is to protect the public welfare by ensuring that only qualified persons are licensed investigators and that appropriate standards of competency and practice are established and enforced. The board administers ORS 703.401 through 703.490, 703.993, and 703.995. The board consists of five members, three licensed investigators, one person in law enforcement, and one representative of the public. All members serve four-year terms, and they're appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. All board members volunteer their time and not paid a per diem, but they are reimbursed for their costs. The board utilizes five subcommittees working on issues such as license applications, continuing education, and compliance exams and rulemaking. The committees are structured in a way that promotes an effective and efficient use of both board member and staff time and resources. Volunteers are utilized when individual projects or programs warrant that their use and they typically provide recommendations to the board. The agency staff consists of three positions, one full-time equivalent executive director, Michael Jacobs, one full-time equivalent licensing specialist, Junior Simmons, and a half-time enforcement officer, and he's splitting his time now with another agency by the name of Michael Zagava. And these are limited duration periods. Both positions are essential to components of our agency staff. As a result of the ongoing workload, the agency is currently requesting that both of these positions be made permanent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Jacobs. I'm the executive director for the Board of Investigators. And for a few minutes, I would like to talk with you about the goals, the board's goals and plans, their performance measures, program administrative costs, and our delivery of services, and different factors that affect our ability to deliver those services. OBI employs long-term and short-term goals in an effort to further its mission. We have a current business plan that is a two-year business plan, and in that business plan we have created 35 different goals that we wanted to accomplish during the current biennium. This plan is an instrumental part of our everyday workload as it helps us, both the board and staff, utilize our resources in an effort to further the board's mission. Our 2001-2007 strategic plan basically identifies five primary strategic issues that the board is facing. And it also identifies goals and ways that we can manage these issues. The five primary issues can be summarized as follows. First, there is a great lack of understanding and knowledge of what the agency's mission and goals are. And oftentimes this creates a misunderstanding of what the board is and what we do. Second, individuals tend to avoid licensing by using a number of different titles other than investigator or operative. And whether or not those titles are listed in our definition of investigator or operative or in our exemptions, they can often create a misconception for the consumer. Third, complaint activity has been much higher than what we had anticipated when we started this agency. The board does expect that to continue, and because of that and for other legal issues that have come up, we are going to be faced with finding resources to deal with those issues. Staff workload and the workload for board members has dramatically increased over the last couple of years for a number of reasons, and so we will be faced with some decisions on how to get the appropriate person power to get that work done. And finally is technology, which is always a big issue as it continues to change at a rapid pace. We must keep informed of all the technological advances and utilize those advances when the costs outweigh the benefits and they're to the advantage of the agency and to the consumer and our licensees. As you know, OBI is a relatively new agency, and because of this, overall agency performance measures have not yet been developed. We have on our agenda to begin developing those in the very near future. Because of our strategic plan and our business plan lend themselves very well to our ability to develop these performance measures. And along with the performance measures, we are going to be developing methods to evaluate those measures and basically against the expectations. These measures will be shared with, obviously, our constituents and the public, and we will attempt to get feedback on the measures that we create. The board attempts to control costs by streamlining as much as possible and wherever possible. A couple of examples, we do have continuing education requirements, and rather than auditing all 100% of those that come in with the renewals, we audit 10%, and it's done on a random basis, so licensees don't know if and when they're going to be audited. We have recently decided to not travel outside the Portland area for board meetings as often as we have. It gets to be very expensive, and our budget is not allowing for that. Those are just a couple of examples. There are some others. Information technology has been a very essential component in the development and of the operation of our agency since our inception. We currently operate on an NT network system with one local database. We currently have three workstations, one of which serves as the network server, and this network system provides support for all 2.5 FTE. A little bit about our delivery of services. We provide services to a number of different groups. First of all, to consumers. We provide services to licensees and registrants. We provide services to applicants for licensure and potential applicants, which is a very large portion of the people that we get on the telephone and we spend a lot of time talking to.
I apologize.
We provide services to other local, state, and federal agencies, and we provide services to professional associations and to schools. There's a number of factors that directly affect the services and how we can provide them. Basically, they're budgetary and workload factors. A couple of examples. When you're developing your agency, you have to know how many applicants you're going to have for licensure. You need to know the number of renewal applications for licensure and registration, the number of consumer complaints that come in, and as well as the cost of processing those complaints that come in. Different legal issues that arise as a result of a new regulatory program, and the level of workload experienced within the current organizational structure of the agency. Thank you very much. Due to the newness of the agency, many of these factors are still not sufficiently known at this time. For example, we just started renewals in June of last year, and so we only have about 8 months worth of history from which to use to project into the future and determine what our renewal rate is going to be.
With that, the agency has concluded its program discussion, and I am Sarah Gates with Budget and Management, Department of Administrative Services, and I have the pleasure of walking you through what the governor's recommended budget for this agency is. If you'll look in front of you, you should have a packet that's entitled The Governor's Recommended Budget for 2001-03. It has a gray cover. And if you'll turn to page 2, you'll see a table that summarizes the expenditures for this agency for the last 3 biennia. And as you heard mentioned a few minutes ago, this is a very new agency. 97-99 was its first biennia of existence. At that point, it received a general fund loan of $50,000 and had other funds limitation of approximately $100,000. The general fund loan was repaid during this current biennia, that is 99-01. They have a legislatively approved budget of $351,000 for the 99-01 biennia. The governor's recommended budget is a 17.7% increase from the legislatively approved level, and it is $413,000 approximately, and it has 2.5 FTE. And as you can see at the bottom of that chart, their FTE has been increasing over time, and that's because of the phase-in of workload and adjusting to what actual demands are being placed on this agency with licensing and complaint activity. Turning to page 3, there's a couple of points that just show you what it is that the governor's recommended budget for this agency is trying to accomplish. Currently, 2 of the 3 staff, that is 1.29 FTE, are limited duration staff. They will disappear at the end of this biennia. However, they are vital to the operations of the agency. The governor's recommended budget makes these staff permanent. It also increases the overall number of FTE from 2.29 up to 2.50. And the reason that the increase is happening is that the part-time investigator was approved at the April 2000 emergency board, and even though it was half-time, when you convert it to full-time equivalency, you only get 0.29. It's one of those wonders of math. But in the governor's recommended budget, that person will be on board for the entire biennia. Thus, it increases the full-time equivalency. The budget management does expect that the growth in this agency will flatten out over time. It's still definitely in its growth phase, and you should not expect to see close to 20% growth every biennia up to the near future, but you will maybe one more biennia of relatively strong growth.
What type of growth is it? Is it growth in the number of people applying? Is it growth in the amount of complaints being serviced? Is it probably a combination of all of them, but...
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, you are correct. It is a combination. A large part of the growth between the 9901 and the 2103 is the increase in full-time equivalency, plus some increased costs for attorney general fees, things like that. And a lot of it is inflation, and I will be going into that in a moment. And making the staff permanent, and over time, the cost of staff goes up as they gain more seniority, things like that. Page 4 shows a pie chart that is very simple, but it basically will point out to you that personal services are, by and large, the biggest component of this budget. It's about a 60% split for personal services, 40% to services and supplies. Page 5 is where I get to walk you through how did we get from the 9901 approved level to the governor's recommended budget. And we're starting with emergency board actions that occurred between sine die for the 99 session and April of 2000. All of those actions get considered approved, legislatively approved, and rolled into the budget. All agencies had a salary pool increase in February of 2000. And then in April of 2000, this agency returned to the emergency board with a request for $74,000 of other funds expenditure limitation, one position. And that was the part-time investigator that you heard mentioned a couple of times already. And at that time, there was only a 0.29 full-time equivalency assigned to the position because it didn't start until midway through the biennium. It also, the emergency board request also increased attorney general expenditure limitation by $8,700 and requested $12,000 of expenditure limitation associated with hearings panel expenditures. At the time of the emergency board, that was unscheduled. Actual bills were received by the agency. Since then, it has been rescheduled by budget and management. At the bottom of the page is a discussion of the current service level budget adjustments. And this agency had net adjustments of approximately $76,000 decrease. And that is because of the limited duration positions that I mentioned a minute ago. Two positions were phased out in the current service level adjustments, and then they are being requested again in policy packages. And then we had another phase out of a little over $11,000 that was related to a one-time cost due to fingerprinting for FBI background checks for existing applicants. Currently, all new applicants receive this check, but the agency needed one-time limitation to, in effect, retroactively check all its existing licensees. Page 6 starts...
Are there a lot of investigators just grandfathered in? Is that it?
I'll let the executive director answer that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, yes, there were about 250 who were essentially grandfathered in. It was a little more complicated than just
They're the ones who need to be fingerprinted.
Yes, all of those who were licensed prior to October 98 when we were granted the authority to do the FBI fingerprint checks, we had to retroactively get those checks done at renewal time.
Is there general voluntary assent to that?
Well, of course, they don't like to pay the fee to do that.
Yes.
But I think there's
about
a general...
$50 or so?
It's $24 for an FBI check. And I think there's a general agreement that that kind of a check needs to be done.
If I may continue, we are on page 6 of my presentation, starting with the policy packages. Package 103 is entitled Essential Operations, and what this package does is provide slightly over $4,000 worth of expenditure limitation to make some technical adjustments to this board's budget. The first is to provide limitation to have some computer support. There is a person who currently provides support to a lot of the boards in the Portland State Office Building, and this agency would like to participate in that sharing agreement. And so they've requested a little over $2,000 of limitation for that expenditure. The amount of limitation in the budget for facilities rent was incorrect in the last biennia. It was based on the wrong number of square feet. So this is a technical adjustment to increased limitation on that line item by approximately $2,100. And finally, the agency is requesting $70 of expenditure limitation to offer the employee assistance program benefits to its staff. Package 105 makes one Office Specialist 2 position permanent. This is phasing out in the current service level adjustments. This brings it back as a permanent position. The cost associated with that position is $79,000. It's 1.0 full-time equivalent. And this is the person who does not only a lot of the licensing activity, all the paperwork, she also answers the phone and serves as basically the right-hand man to the executive director.
That's a two-year amount.
That is correct, Senator Stroh. Turning to page 7, policy package 106 makes the investigator position permanent. And this position is part-time, so it has a 0.50 full-time equivalency, has a cost of $50,000, and will be permanently in their budget at that level. Package 107 is related to out-of-state travel expenditures. Being a new agency, this board has no out-of-state travel expenditure limitation. And as such, they have not yet been able to attend any of the national conferences or become members in that association. And this is something that they feel is very vital to their organizational operations, and budget management concurs with that. This package provides them with $5,000 to attend these meetings. It would be the executive director and one board member, and it would also allow them to be members of the National Association of Security and Investigative Regulators. There we go. Finally, page 8, the last policy package for this board. It's package 108, and this package was originally attached to the Senate Bill 406, which you heard mentioned a few minutes ago. And this bill, or this package, was ratifying the revenue that would be associated with recouping the cost of administrative hearings when the respondent is found in violation. However, since the budget was put together, Senate Bill 406 has been changed, as you heard mentioned by committee staff. And so this package is no longer appropriate or needed, and as a result, the agency is just requesting that it be eliminated from the governor's recommended budget, and budget management concurs. There are no technical adjustments other than what I've mentioned to this budget. At this point, I'd be happy to take any questions you have, either for myself or the agency would be happy to respond as well.
Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Curious on the, maybe Jackie might be able to answer, I'm assuming you were involved with the initial startup of the agency back in 97?
Actually, sir, I wasn't. I was one of the investigators that they required to have a license and made me pay my $24.
Oh, okay.
I started in January on this board in January of this year.
Okay, and I wouldn't think you were there. Were you in 97?
I was here.
With the startup?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm talking about the legislative package that started the, the agency, and looking at, and I guess what I'm getting to is the fees. We were at the fees that we're at right now, I guess it's my understanding at least that there was some discussion at the time the this agency was being formed that the fees were set at such a high amount only to help assist with the startup, and that there would be some discussion or something later on, maybe in the renewal aspect of it, that we would have lower fees than what's set right now. Can you give any comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, I'd be happy to. When we first set up the fees, our first task was to, number one, identify how many investigators and operatives would be out there. It was a very difficult task. We had many programs to implement in about a 3 or 4 month period. And we had to quickly come up with some kind of estimate of how much it would cost to run this agency. At the time, we developed the fees, and as they turned out for that biennium, they turned out right. The fees were set at $550 for 2 years for an investigator, and $275 for 2 years for an operative. What we didn't know at that time were a number of factors. Number one, we didn't know how many people were going to be renewing their license when renewals came up 2 years later. We didn't really know what the overall costs of operating this agency were going to be, because we didn't know what the workload was going to be. I remember what the board said was, we need these fees where they are right now to get us going, And if we can in the future, depending on these factors that we have to watch, we will be happy to reduce our fees if it's appropriate, and we're able to do that at the time. We also realize that we have to somehow come up with a contingency fund. Typically, that's about 6 months, and for this agency, that would be about $75,000 to $100,000. We also have to
follow. What would a contingency fund be for?
Not a contingency fund. It's a reserve fund.
Ending balance.
Ending balance.
Okay.
Part of that is to deal with our cash flow, because when this agency was started, the licensing didn't actually start and fees didn't start coming in until just halfway into the biennium. So our major influx of cash doesn't come in until halfway through the biennium.
Okay, so I guess what I'm hearing is that there was no commitments made on the part of the board or the agency that the fees that were anticipated or that were set would actually be reduced. That you're saying that you were going to look at it, I think, is what
Mr. Chair,
saying.
Representative Doyle, that is correct. From everything that I can remember, of course the board would be in favor of reducing the fees if we can, but I don't remember anyone saying that we were going to do it or that there was a commitment to do it. Obviously, we will do it because we're not in the business here to create a big ending balance for our agency. That's not our mission.
Okay, to follow up,
I'd like to make a comment, if I may, sir.
Sure.
I have been a sponsor of a state license for many, many years, and the reason being is if you're if you're an investigator in the state of Oregon, there are certain cities that require a license. The city of Salem was one of them. And it was very difficult to have a license in the city of Salem, and then you would travel to the city of Eugene, and you would have to purchase that license, which with the time you get your bond for the city of Salem, and specifically the city of Salem required a bond for the city of Salem. The city of Eugene required a bond and a license. And the time you went to these individual cities, your license fees, if you acted legally as an investigator and you purchased those licenses to be able to work in those cities, your licensing fees were much more expensive than the $500 or what the fee that we're charging now for the two-year term. I would pay three times the amount that we're paying now to accomplish a state license, simply because when I send, or I don't have investigators working for me now, I did have at one time have 10 investigators working for me, I would send those investigators to that particular city. I would purchase that license and bond for my company and for that particular agency or agent. And this, what I saw happening is the investigators weren't getting that license. They were working in that city against that city ordinance. And we complied. We wanted other investigators to comply. And that's why I think this particular fee is extremely reasonable.
I guess maybe, Jack, it's more appropriate for you as a board member to, if you can comment on the two bills, I guess, that are on the Senate side, the 426 and 723, and the impact those bills, as they are now at least, would have on the agency.
Give me some help, Michael. I 406 is my personal opinion on the licensing of investigators. I think all investigators need to be licensed, whether they work for attorneys, whoever they work for. It's not fair to other investigators to require a license and have some exempt. The problem that you're going to have is exempting investigators working for attorneys is that I do a lot of insurance work. All of that is directed by a claims examiner who's in turn in contact with attorneys. So I could easily say that I'm getting directions from attorneys, so that would make me exempt. I'm not sure that is, I don't believe that's appropriate. I don't like it. I've talked to many attorneys who don't like it. It seems to me that the working investigator is not getting a fair shake. If he works for in this particular case, I think it was Metropolitan Defenders, it seems that they are getting a special exemption, and that's what that was based around. I don't like it. I don't think it's appropriate. And it doesn't serve the public very well. I don't think some of the investigators would have the qualifications possibly. They're not, they don't get the ongoing continuing education. You know, it just goes on. So basically, that's my opinion on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, may I address the fiscal impact of those bills? Senate Bill 406, as it's currently written, would basically put our agency out of existence. The fiscal impact was estimated around $300,000. And our total budget request is just over $400,000. Senate Bill 723, I believe it is, which is requesting to reduce our fees. I looked and did some calculations on that, and I don't have that right in front of me, but I believe it was a reduction of approximately 20% to 25% of our revenue that we're coming in. That, in addition with the other issue that we're currently facing, which is a much lower rate of renewals than we had anticipated, would give us a serious problem with our revenue.
Thank you.
Senator Trill.
Were you before the Substantive Committee, and were you able to explain these problems connected with the bill before they made these amendments and sent the bills on to us?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, I was out of town when that hearing was held. We had a hearing a few weeks before on the original version of Senate Bill 406, and we testified at that time on that language. I was not aware of the amendments when they happened.
You didn't get notification or anything?
I did not. I was not aware of the changes, and so I was not there to testify.
Nobody from the board was there to represent your point of view on it?
I believe that Jack was there, but in the audience, and he did not testify. But you should hear from him on that.
Thanks.
I'm not.
Put me on the spot. Would you like me to respond, sir?
Yeah, I sure would.
I'm relatively new, and I'm not real comfortable coming to these meetings and testifying. So I sat in the back and I listened, and I don't believe that really came up. I think it happened so quickly. It was over and done. Senator Minnis, I believe, chaired that, and it just came and went so quickly, almost before I could even raise my hand and come to the front. So I did not testify at that committee, and I don't believe at that hearing. But it seemed to me to be already pretty much set in the Senator Minnis's mind what was going to happen. So basically, I just cowered out and did not get up.
What rationale was given for making these changes?
I don't believe they did give any at that time. As I said, it was pretty much pre-decided, or at least that was my opinion.
No rationale. Uh-huh. And you got no forewarning the other time you had the hearing on the bill that there would be changes made in it?
Well, may I back up for just a moment? The individual representing Metropolitan Public Defenders was there, and I don't believe he testified. I think he was prepared to testify. As I remembered, he didn't. Senator Minnis asked him a question about how it would affect his budget, and I believe he said that something it was going to cost his agency approximately $40,000 in licensing fees. So I think at that point, he didn't really testify. He just answered a few questions from Senator Minnis, and that's where it went from there.
The bill is now in Ways and Means, right? And clearly, you can't, if both of these bills are in effect, it would mean your agency couldn't operate, right?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Is there any way of modifying the amounts, maybe so that you'd have enough money to operate acceptably and still making a little bit of a movement to reduce the fees exempt some people? Who wants to be exempted? Everybody?
I believe that's pretty much the case. A lot of the people want to be exempt. A lot of the investigators out there, they don't like the fact that they have to be licensed. They don't like the fact that they have to have continued education. They don't like the fact that they have someone looking over the shoulders to make sure that the public welfare is protected. So there's a lot of them that would like to see that they're exempt. I would say a large portion of them.
Why do you think that's true? There was obviously some support to create this this board and get people involved to begin with. What's happened? Or this is just the nature of these professionals. They don't want to be licensed.
Well, being one of those in that profession for approximately 26 years, I've always wanted to be licensed because it gives you at least some type of stature, some kind of qualifications. I do believe that there are a number of investigators out there that simply just don't like to have authority, and it just simply comes down to that. They don't want to respond to continuing educations. They don't want to abide by deadlines.
My feeling is probably registration and licensure is a good idea because it would bring some kind of uniform standards and keep a lot of people maybe that wouldn't meet those standards from operating, and you need some standards in the profession. That's my opinion, and I probably voted to create the board. But gosh, you need enough support in the profession itself to believe that you've got a core of people who really support you. And do you think that core is out there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, as a director in the office, I do get a lot of phone calls in support of licensing. I don't know what the percentage of individuals who don't want licensing. We don't track that information. I don't have any way to get that exactly. I do know that I do get a lot of calls of support. Often people who say that they support, at least in conversations with me, say that they don't go out and broadcast their opinions because sometimes they feel threatened. Sometimes they don't feel a need to do that. When you don't agree with something, typically there's more of a need to go out and voice your opinion.
Senator Dole.
I look at one of the comments that LFO put on the budget under the heading of budget environment performance measures, saying that one of the five issues driving your budget request is a lack of understanding and knowledge by the public of the agency's mission and purpose. I'm wondering what effect that is having on even your own constituents, having concerns with fees and, just the general direction of this agency. I mean, it's a brand new startup, and like with anything, there's going to be kinks to work out. And if it turns out the board's going in one direction, but all your licensees want to go in a different one, how can you justify expansion of an agency when the people you're licensing aren't in agreement with that mission or don't know the mission?
I agree, sir. And if I'm not addressing you properly, I apologize. I believe, before I came on the board, I started getting some of the minutes sent to me just so I could review. And I noticed that there seemed to be, between the Oregon Association of Legal Investigators, which is being represented today by here today, I noticed that there seemed to be a lot of antagonism. And Michael Jacobs set up a meeting with Cynthia, the president here. And I addressed that with her, and we seem to at least agree that there is some antagonism there. And I believe it's because they don't fully understand exactly what the board's position is. The board and has a position to protect the public, just as the mission states. And they I think they appreciate that, but maybe they don't like the way that it is exercised. It's just simply, I believe, some communication problems, and possibly some personal problems that have existed. I don't believe that the entire group of the Oregon Association of Legal Investigators agrees with their position. I think that there is a number of people in that organization that take their position and present it in a manner that is then accepted by the entire association, which it sometimes is different than our position. And it's not entirely, and I don't think that we're entirely always apart. I think that we, at times, we're trying to do the same thing, but the way that they want us to do it is not in a manner that we can do it as set out by the board's mission and policies.
May I follow up to that, Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle? In response to the lack of understanding by licensees and constituents, the board is aware of of what's going on. When we first started, we had an enormous amount of work to do, and we had to do it quickly. When we went through our strategic planning sessions last year, that surfaced as our number one issue that we need to deal with. We need to help the licensing community, we need to help the public, and any other constituency groups really understand why we're here and what it is that we're doing. As a result of that, we publish a quarterly newsletter that we send out to all of our licensees and to anyone on our mailing list. I have created our agency's website, and we're trying to utilize that more to get information out there as to why the board makes certain decisions. We put all of our board meeting minutes out on the web. We are in the process of creating a consumer brochure that can be available to consumers to help them understand, number one, that we're here, and that why we're here and what we do.
That's true.
No,
I think a minute ago in the conversation it was pointed out that that if you don't have statewide licensure, you're likely to have local licensure from one place to the other with varying regulations and with bonding requirements and all of those things. Does the state licensure excuse you from that local licensure? Seems to me like that was that's a tremendous argument to the profession.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, when we first started, there were about... Actually, I don't know exactly how many cities that licensed, but most of them, when state licensing began, dropped their requirements for licensure.
There still are some local requirements.
If there are, I'm not aware of them.
I don't believe so, sir. I know at this time, I don't believe there is.
Okay, and those were likely to come back if you guys went away.
Absolutely.
In addition to that, Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, there are currently, of all the states, there are only 9 states in the country that do not license and regulate investigators. And I know that 2 of those who aren't currently are working on getting licensure laws. Of those that do license, 6 of them are set up with boards similar to the way that Oregon has a board created. And 6 others have a board where they license investigators and security guards together.
Well, if you have local licensure, it seems to me there must be a need for some kind of licensure and some kind of jurisdiction over the operation. It's felt by some people anyway. There must be enough complaints that somebody has to deal with that they say, boy, we better do something about licensing this profession.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, as of today, in the first year of our organization, we didn't have the resources and the time to do a lot of enforcement activity, because we were creating our agency. Since we began about 2 years ago, we have received 128 complaints, which is substantially more than many of the real small agencies such as ours. Those complaints vary widely. A lot of them are against individuals practicing without a license. Almost half of our complaints are about that. There are some complaints about ethical violations, about violations of the laws and statutes as they're written, and I could go on.
I would like to just comment, if I may, sir. I'm licensed in the state of California, in the state of Washington, and Boise, Idaho. The licensing procedures there are much more stringent than they are in Oregon. The minor requirements to be a licensed investigator in Oregon, in my opinion, are not enough. But without that, you could imagine what type of person would be out there running around as an investigator doing God knows what. But I could tell you stories, many, many stories. And one of the reasons that the police department, since I've been doing this so long, I know a lot of the police departments, I give you an example, would be Gresham Police Department. We had made a habit of always calling the police department and letting them know we would be in the areas as a courtesy. And this was in the early 70s. Or late 70s, early 80s, and at that time they instituted the policy that you had to have a license. They required you that you come in before you actually went out on your assignment to come into their department, check in. This was just something so that they would know you're in the area. If they got a complaint or something, they wouldn't have to respond, waste their time or energy. And it was a good thing. But what they've done now is once we have a state license, they believe that the qualifications of when you have that state license, you're qualified to be in that area. They still would like a call-in. Just let them know that you're in the area, but you don't have to come into their agency. What that does is saves them time, saves me time. When I had to send an investigator down there and wait for someone to come to the counter. I mean, it was time-consuming and costly, and it's been effective for the police departments. It's been effective for the investigator.
When prior to the state licensing taking over, and there were the local jurisdictions that had license requirements, did they require continuing education like the state board does?
No, sir. Basically,
what were the requirements?
The requirements for the city of Salem is that you purchase a license. You'd have to have a bond. I think their license, I think it started out at $50, and I think eventually over the years it went up to $125. You had to have a bond. I think it was a $2,000 or a $5,000 bond. And eventually they had you do a CCH or a criminal history. They did a criminal history on you. But even if you had a criminal history, you could still be licensed in that city depending on the attitude of the person licensing. It was unacceptable. Then they didn't.
Sorry, unacceptable to whom?
Well, it was unacceptable to me. I would hate to see a felon licensed as a private investigator in the city of Salem. And another, something else that was unacceptable to me, since I live in Kaiser, Oregon, and if I worked in the city of Salem, or any of my employees worked in the city of Salem, I had to have a license. But then they would not enforce that on someone from Portland coming in. Someone from Portland to come in, work in here, no problem. And that was not acceptable because it was unfair to me financially as a businessman, and just morally it was unacceptable. And so that was one of the reasons that I thought this licensing, state licensing, was, it's not only a good thing, it's a great thing. For not only for the investigators, but for the state of Oregon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, I'm assuming there are other people that want to testify. Okay. Why don't we continue with the rest of the audience then?
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think we'll probably be revisiting this when 406 gets to us.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom Mann. I am the lobbyist for the Oregon Association of Licensed Investigators. With me today is our president, Cynthia Hamilton, as Paul Harvey would say. And now for the rest of the story. I want to bring you back to 1997, because in order to understand all the things that you've heard and all the questions you've asked, you need to understand why licensing came about. OALI, the Oregon Association of Licensed Investigators, was the lead proponent of licensing. We sponsored the bill. It was our idea, and it was based upon three ideas. First, having a license would be an asset to private investigators. There would be a criminal background check. We would make sure that Tanya Harding's bodyguard was not a licensed investigator. Now, that was an issue. Second, there was the continuing education requirements. We thought that if you're going to be a profession, you would have a requirement to have continuing education, because there are all sorts of things you can learn. I don't know how much you know about the private investigation field, but there's all sorts of us. There are people that do criminal defense. There are people that do civil. There are people that do corporate. There are people that do domestic. There are all sorts. There are fire investigators. There are accident reconstruction investigators. There's people that do workers' compensation fraud. We all do different things. So to say that you're an investigator is not really a box you can fit nicely into. So for continuing ed, there's all sorts of different things we all do to get to continuing education. We thought that if we formalized that in statute, that would be a good thing. The third thing was we wanted a set of ethics under which the entire profession would fall under. So everyone was kind of on the same page as to what the ethical requirements of the profession were. The overriding factor, though, of that bill was professional development. If you listen to the tapes and you go back to the hearings, every investigator who testified and the proponents of the bill were pushing for professional development of this industry, not a police agency. When you have licensing, you get regulation. That's fine. We believe in that. There are some people that need to be regulated. A few bad apples can spoil the bunch if you don't take care of them. But when the OBI amassed itself after the legislation was passed, it decided that its mission was police agency, period. All the professional development issues that we discussed during hearings and the intent of the legislation went right out the window. I've challenged Jack and the folks at the OBI. I said, go back to the tapes, go to the archives building and go listen to the tapes of those hearings and find out what your mission is. They've testified that they need to educate the public and us investigators to what their mission is. I beg to differ. I think they need to educate themselves as to what their mission was. And in our mind, they have not provided the even slightest attempt do the mission that was intended, which is why you're seeing bills like 703, the change in 406, and I have something cooking with John Minnis and Senate Judiciary that will be a complete reorganization of the OBI that includes the fee issue. So let's talk about the Ways and Means budget. What they're asking for is an increase in authorization. I understand that the executive director may not know this, but Lila Ashenbrenner, who was a chairman of the board, as well as Bill Antone, who was the chairman, the first chairman of the board, told us specifically, when we get everyone licensed, the fees will be reduced. And you can ask any investigator, and they will tell you that. That was our understanding of how this process would work. I have a list of all the other states here that do licensing. We're in the top six in the nation. Most other states, they'll do an application fee, plus a test fee and your fingerprint fees and all that. And then when you renew, they drop the fee, because it certainly doesn't cost as much to do a renewal on somebody than it does to do an original application on somebody, because the background check is only a two-year check. You don't have to go through the same process. What we're asking for in Senate Bill 703 is that the fee be reduced on renewal to $300 for investigators and $150 for operatives. You heard testimony from the board that the current fee is $550 a biennium plus the sundry fees for testing and licensing and applications, and then $275 for operatives. What we're trying to do, and why we're testifying this morning, is we oppose this current budget. And we oppose it because we don't believe that the OBI kept its promise to us. And we believe it was a promise. We believed in the handshake. We believe when two board chairmen told us the intent was to lower the fees, and when we got everyone licensed, we're going to lower those fees. We believe that. And as the people who created this board, we believe we have a little bit of say in how this should act. We've been called constituents, and I learned a lot today about these services that supposedly as constituents were getting provided, because, to be honest with you, here's my little blue card. I've not once had to show anybody this blue card since I got it. This is my license. It doesn't mean a thing. I've not received services other than this blue card, really, from the OBI. So what we're trying to do is we have a broad agenda, O'Alley does. One of the things is to lower the fees. We think that this agency will continue to grow. Its objective is not only to license investigators, but eventually license paralegals and all sorts of different groups of people who may be involved in the investigatory process. The intent, obviously, is you get more fees, you grow the agency, you can do your job. We all know that government agencies work different than businesses. Government says, well, we have this mission, and in order to do that mission, we need to collect so much money. Business says, we get so much money, and we have to do our job within that much money. There are only about 450 of us. When you start talking about growth of a budget on the backs of about 450 of us, and then you start talking about people not renewing because they're so disgusted with the process, and then you talk about the Bill 406 with John Minnis's gut and stuff that eliminates a section of investigators because they work for attorneys, you start putting more of a burden on the poor saps that are still here that have an authorization for $413,000. Because if you authorize that budget, there's going to be less of us to pay it, which authorizes them at the end to say, well, we have this authorization and budget, we have to raise our fees, which goes the complete opposite direction of what we're trying to do here. I want to make a note about 406. 406 was a work session. Jack didn't have a chance to operate because the chair came in with two amendments. Nobody had seen them. The first amendment was the gut and stuff to change the licensing for those investigators who work solely for attorneys. The second was an amendment to abolish the OBI, completely abolish it. And I asked the chair not to do that because we were working on trying to reorganize it to get to the original intent of the OBI, which is licensure and professional development, which the OBI certainly doesn't see its mission.
Sure. What does professional development mean? Let's hear what you think it means so that they know what you expect from them. What does it mean?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, I'm Cynthia Hamilton. I'm the president of the Oregon Association of Licensed Investigators. We were the founding fathers for the OBI. We wanted professional development. And to answer your question, what that means to us is continuing education.
You want continuing? They have it.
Yes.
Okay.
We want continuing education. We want an agency in the OBI that does not limit where we can get it. I can't go down here to Willamette and take a course in law because the OBI says I can't. Okay, that's a real graphic issue.
They're limiting the. They want you to have it, but they limit it.
Yes.
Because why do they limit it?
They have a. Tom, you want to address that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, one of the administrative rules they wrote, which we don't understand, is they said that you could only get law and ethics CE from a nonprofit organization. And when they had their hearing on that, about 25 investigators showed up. At least half of us testified against the bill. We were all against that. We thought it was silly that you couldn't go to a Willamette or to an attorney or somebody who's for-profit and get CE under that. And they rolled us. They simply just said, that's nice, and passed it. So that's an example. I think professional development goes beyond that. We envision the board playing an active role with investigators in letting us know what opportunities were available for CE, helping even putting on CE courses if that were the case, showing us new techniques, being involved. You know how the bar is set up, how attorneys set up committees, and they're very involved with that? We kind of perceived the board being that kind of situation when we created it, where all of us investigators would set up committees where we would do ethic training, we would do all sorts of neat things that would help professionalize the industry. Now, let's say you have a guy like Tanya Harding's bodyguard, and he wants to be an investigator. We would mentor him. I don't think this was a full employment act, which is what it turned into, because some of the way the bills was written. People can't get into this industry for certain reasons, which is another thing substantively we're trying to change. We believe in mentoring. We believe in training. We believe in apprenticeships. Those type of things are good for the industry. And that's what we mean by professional development.
Does the bill call for those things? The bill that passed creating the agency?
The bill was a little vague, and unfortunately I was not involved in the bill, and this is where the problem lied. When they wrote the bill and 703-401 was established in statute, it created the board, it gave them certain functions, and obviously when you give an agency the decision-making authority to decide what its mission is, they'll do that from the statute. But again, they didn't listen to the tapes and the intent of the legislation. So what I've done is, through Senator Harper's office, I'm drafting an amendment to one of my bills that specifically says the mission is this, these are the functions, these are the things you do, et cetera, et cetera. So we lay out more specifically what we're doing. I just don't think that the...
It would have been useful to have done in the first
It would have been
place.
Useful in the first place, yes. I just don't think that we're definitely not on the same page. I think the testimony you've heard that there's been antagonism, the reason there's been antagonism is there are investigators who feel that the board didn't do what they thought it was going to do, and they were hoodwinked. They went along with O'Alley and all of us to create this thing.
Why didn't you get some of your members on the board?
We did one, and I'll tell you a funny story about that. Bill Antone is an O'Alley member. He was chairman of the board. We came to session last session with two or three bills to make some changes. One of them was to change the mission because we saw where it was going. Bill Antone and I sat in front of Jane Loken's committee, and the OBI stood up and opposed us. They opposed their own chairman, and they opposed O'Alley on the changes we were trying to make to get to the intent. So we lost that battle. And Senator Tro, that's why we're back again this session with a little bit more vigor and a little bit more constitution to take on these issues that we weren't able to do in a more friendly manner last time.
You certainly put the agency in jeopardy by doing that. If it'd be nice if you could work those things out without putting the budget in jeopardy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, I disagree with that. I think that the agency is doing all sorts of things it doesn't need to do. The renewal fee.
What I'm saying is if you could work that out without doing it this way, I think it would be better. Maybe you can't. Maybe this is the only way you can do it. I don't know. That's an internal thing. But
sure. Any other questions? What we'd ask is one of two things. Either find a big dark board and stick this in while we work on the substantive legislation through the process, or seriously consider what we're asking for in Senate Bill 703, which is the reduction of the renewal fee down to $300 for investigators and $150 for those operatives, because that's fair. That's what every other state in the union is pretty much doing. You're not getting dinged the same amount for a renewal because it certainly doesn't cost that same amount of money. And that's pretty much our position.
Further question?
I'd like to, may I have a closing comment here, Chair, members? In looking at, and going back to your question, Senator Tro, about professionalism, the Oregon Association of Licensed Investigators is definitely for addressing the issues of those investigators that are not performing up to ethical standards. We in no way think that that should be thrown out. It is very much a part of what should be continuing in licensing, that the public does have recourse should one of these, in quoting Michael Jacobs, and he had 128 complaints. Over half of them, though, however, were non-licensed investigators. Then he cited some other examples that were not addressing how investigators do their jobs at all, but questioning some of the OBI rules and regulations. So what that says to me is that there are very few of us that are licensed that are causing problems out there for the public, and how many of those that were investigated were then sanctioned. And I don't know the answer to that. However, that is not something that we want to throw out at all. But in reiterating what Mr. Mann said about training, you know, mentoring, that kind of thing, and when people coming into the business have to have hours, have to have a different set of standards than a licensed investigator, is very important.
Do you is part of the mission that you want this board to have a consumer protection mission?
I think
are they to go out and find those investigators who aren't licensed and who are unscrupulous or not?
I think there's already rules. I think there's already, Chair, Senator Trow, to answer your question, I think that those agencies are already in place.
Yeah.
The Attorney General's office, for one.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, if you have a consumer complaint and you have
I think what people are going to think if we license people that we have the very best people and that the licensing agency is also out there trying to protect the public against the unlicensed people. Somebody needs to do that. Now, maybe the Attorney General does, but...
There is some of that. The question gets to be who really does the investigation and enforcement. I think the OBI, even now, with the current rules, is impotent to do anything about the unlicensed investigators to some degree. They've not really taking care of that problem because we do have a lot of unlicensed investigators. What I would do is give that to the AG and say you have a consumer fraud issue and have a little bit more teeth behind that than this little agency, which is not going to be able to do much about that.
Well, the AG has a lot of things to do already.
And that
probably won't get done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I guess... Go ahead and sit down. Clearly, we don't have the numbers and probably the will to move into a work session. Has the chair discussed how we're going to be a process for bringing this together with the substantive growth?
Mr. Chair, my only conversation with Senator Miller at this point has been that he wanted to do a public hearing today only. There's been no further planning as far as this budget, this particular agency.
And there is no notice for work session anyway, so we couldn't do anything.
I think clearly we'll need to coordinate the bills as well as the budget before any action is taken. Just as a word of advice is that I think Senator Trow is very correct in terms of the substantive bills that are going to impact these budgets. They could very well eliminate the agency completely. That is a clear risk. And it would probably do very well to continue the discussions amongst yourselves in terms of trying to build some type of industry consensus that will help guide this committee through that maze. And this, I think, some of this is pretty natural growing pains for an agency that starts. I'm getting some flashbacks. I'm in past life was a licensed plumber. And we dealt with an awful lot of these same issues, the traveling from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. It was a painful, expensive mess to have to deal with until we were able to get some regional licensing, as well as our state licenses. And certainly, non-compliance with licensing becomes probably for the plumbing board. That's 50% of the cases that they deal with, because you've always got people outside of the scope of the industry that either participate through ignorance or to save the licensing fees. and it becomes a big part of everybody's workload. But I think just word of advice is get together and start working some of these issues out, because you can undoubtedly do a better job within the industry of dealing with these issues than we can. And certainly we'll do the best that we can, but I see that there's a real collision course. There's probably, you're probably in a position to deal with it a lot better than we are. Senator Troche?
Yeah, I just want to say I would think that you guys would set up joint meetings and get together and say, look, if we want to save this agency, how can we do it? What do we need? What sort of changes do we need? Let's agree on them. Let's come out of here unified to support something, and we can get you a budget so that you can do it. If you come in here fighting, we can't probably get you anything.
Well, and I guess just to reiterate that as well, you know, we're in a mode in this budget cycle to look for savings, and you know, if the testimony here shows conflict between the agency and its constituents, to me, I'm seeing a savings of $400,000 here that can go to other needy projects. So if I'm not seeing that we've got some consensus on the direction of this agency, then I'm not seeing a need for it.
Can't really spend this money on anything.
Oh, other funds, you're right. Well, still.
one other comment from the same poll, but is that this session is getting ready to start moving very, very quickly. There's indication that we'll be out of here by early June. There's a great deal of very significant budget work that will have to be done between May 15th and June 8th. So I guess what we're all saying is try and come to consensus if you possibly can. The other one is try and come to consensus as quickly as possible, because I would hate to see an agency like this that I think is very valuable, and I very much support licensing and very much support the goals that you've all laid out. But there's a very good possibility that this is something that could be lost in the shuffle towards the end of the session. That the time is going to be real limited very soon. With no other business before us, the committee's adjourned.